8 a.m. and some change, having arrived, I'm going to call the meeting to order. We're just one short of a quorum, and again, thank you all members for venturing in on a very, very snowy day. It seems like we're running this replay every meeting, but do appreciate everyone's attendance. So when we do get a quorum, we will then officially do the minutes and make motions and so forth. So the plan today is we do have two identical bills, again, House File 670, Representative Freiberg's bill, and House File 779, Representative Swedzinski's bill. And so what I would like to do, members, is to, when we get going here, we'll move House File 670, have Representative Freiberg present his bill. When he's done presenting the bill, then I would ask Representative Swedzinski to join him and present and make any comments he would like. And then at that time, we'll take questions and then also have testifiers at that point. And then we will move Representative Freiberg's bill, and then we'll do the motions on Representative Swedzinski's bill. So with that, let's Representative Freiberg, welcome to the committee. And we're not going to move your bill now, but if you would describe House File 670.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt and committee members, for your time. House File 670 addresses an issue remaining from a tax bill that we passed a few years ago in 2013. We passed a tax bill that exempted local governments from paying sales tax. Because of an issue, I understand there was some rulemaking involved related to an interpretation of that. This bill addresses an issue that was left undone by that. Local units of government, so cities, counties, and I understand this includes school districts as well, are required to pay taxes on construction materials. So that leaves essentially taxpayers within that jurisdiction being double taxed. The tax is going to the local jurisdiction, and then that local jurisdiction paying taxes on construction materials. So this bill would address that issue. That's pretty much a summary of it. I think it's a pretty solid proposal with bipartisan support. So I don't really need to say more than that, I believe.
Very good. Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. These bills are pretty straightforward in the fact, just some anecdotal evidence really looking at just how communities are impacted. I know I've got a couple of cities when they've done water treatment plants that maybe didn't prepare for it or knew about it coming, but it cost them hundreds of thousands of dollars of extra revenue, in particular school districts as well. We've all have districts that have done construction projects, updating to their facilities, and I particularly have one school district in my district that has seen over $100,000 hit. And it's a lot of times communities, they look at the law and say if they're working with an engineering firm that maybe isn't quite as familiar, that haven't done as much work in these particular areas, that understand that the exemption exists, but in practicality it does not. Taxpayers are often left holding the bag, which is fine, but oftentimes when it's not planned for, that's a big issue as well. And so when you're dealing with smaller communities, they on top of that seem to be getting hit. And I think just bringing the law into practical use just makes common sense, so that our communities and cities, so that local property taxes aren't going towards paying state sales tax.
So, thank you. And we do have a quorum now, so let's do a little bookkeeping. So we have the minutes of February 7th, 2019. Representative Les Legarde moves approval of those minutes. Any discussion on approval of those minutes? Seeing none, I'm going to call for the vote on the motion to approve the February 7th, 2019 minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. At this time, who would like to move House File 670? Representative Les Legarde moves House File 670 for possible inclusion into the omnibus tax bill. All right. So at this time, is there – oh, Representative Davids, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to Chair Freiberg, you mentioned in your testimony that they're being double taxed. Aren't they just being taxed once, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Freiberg.
It's semantic. I mean, in my mind, it's sort of a form of double taxation, just because they pay their property taxes to the local unit of government, and then the local unit of government is paying taxes also on construction materials, the way things work out now. So, in my mind, that seems like double taxation. But you're a recent tax chair, Representative Davids, so I'd be interested to know if that's improper terminology.
Representative Davids, did you want to respond?
Well, I would just say two things. First of all, that the Swedzinski bill and the Chair Freiberg's bill, they're taxation with representation, first of all. Second of all, this goes back to, let us remember where this comes from. This comes from 1991 in the tax bill compromise, where cities and counties were begging for this tax, and I mean begging. But the alternative was they would lose all their LGA and CPA. So that's where it came from. And ever since 1991, of course, my first years, you don't do a whole lot. Shouldn't really speak at all, really. and so the first few years, nothing really happened. But since then, I have been, and with your help, Chair Marquardt, we've been whittling away at this over the years. First of all, it was ambulances. I carried a bill to get rid of it on ambulances, then fire trucks, then. Now we're trying for equipment, and as we've done the best we could to get rid of this tax, because if you think about it, we're having government tax government, and that's not good tax policy. And so I love these bills. These are good bills. Let's get them passed. The problem with getting them all done at once and why it's taking time is because it costs money. It costs money to do this, but I think it's money well spent. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So thank you very much, Representative Davids. So very good. So anyone else, members, testifiers from the audience?
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. I want to first of all thank Representatives Freiberg and Swedzinski for introducing these bills this year. This is an important issue for our communities. It's so important that you've already seen two bills this year that have come to you that would specifically exempt sales taxes for a couple of individual city projects. We've had other bills introduced over the past couple of years for the city of Mora, the city of Elko New Market, where they were doing wastewater upgrades. And because of the nature of contracting, when the contractor purchases the materials, those materials are subject to the sales tax unless the cities or the counties or the school districts follow a rigorous set of rules. Essentially, those rules require that either the city, county, or school district purchases all of the 2x4s and cinder blocks on their own, or they have to go through a process where they have to basically bid labor and materials separately. So there's a possibility of actually having two different contractors on a project, one that is supplying the material, one that is actually doing installation. They also have to appoint that contractor to be a purchasing agent on behalf of the local unit of government. Because the rule, well, and let me explain why the rule is there. The Department of Revenue, and I think they have a role and responsibility in making sure that our taxes are collected where they should be collected, and they should be exempt where they are, where entities are exempt. The challenge here is that you have a third party, a private contractor, purchasing materials, and I think the Department of Revenue, I don't want to put words in their mouth, they want to make sure that more material is not purchased tax exempt than is necessary for the project. And therefore, this rigorous set of rules is really in place to make sure that taxes are paid when taxes are due. So we're not complaining about that. But we have sat down with the Department of Revenue and come up with basically this bill as an alternative to an outright upfront exemption. So under this bill, what would happen is a city, county, or school would employ a contractor, construct a project, and when the project is completed, the contractor would give the local unit of government the invoices that that indicate what purchases were made, and then the city or the county or the school would file that information with the Department of Revenue and get a refund. This would give the department its control over the exemption while giving the local unit of government a way to get a refund from the Department of Revenue. So really, that's really the crux of this bill. I know that the revenue note the revenue analysis has increased slightly since we last heard this bill. I know there are more projects going on. We have a lot of wastewater treatment and water treatment facility upgrades. And when cities have to pay sales tax on those essential governmental facilities, it can really increase the cost to the taxpayers and ratepayers in those communities. So with that, Mr. Chair and members, I really appreciate your support for this bill. Again, this would help all local units of government, even school districts that were never subject to the sales tax, Chair Davids. They frequently, when they construct a new school building, they've told us that it's not worth the red tape to secure the exemption, and they go ahead and pay the 6.875% to the state just because it is too cumbersome to employ. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would stand for any questions.
Any questions from members? From Mr. Carlson? Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize for being late this morning. The train got hit by a pickup truck or something out here, so ooh, I don't know what was going on. Everybody was backed up. Mr. Carlson, I'm curious, and I recognize that this is not a full-blown fiscal note, but how much do you think the department uses up in terms of their resources to process all of these claims that are being submitted? Does anybody from revenue, given in your conversations with them?
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian.
Mr. Carlson.
I will mention that we do have a lot of refund provisions in state law for various facilities. And just like the Invergrove Heights and the Minnetonka bills that came forward this year, it is not unusual. And in Chapter 297A, I think Ms. Dalton could probably recite the 50 or 60.
75.
How many?
297A.75.
But how many, Ms. Dalton, how many exemptions are spelled out in that particular statute?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, there have been probably 50. A number of them have already expired, though.
Mr. Carlson.
So, Mr. Chair, I will just mention that the department knows how to do the refund process. I do not know how much time and paperwork it requires of the Department of Revenue staff.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, my point is that then is there another time that we should be looking at and encouraging revenue to streamline these processes even more so that it doesn't require as much time on both ends? But.
Any other questions from members? Not? Mr. Carlson, thank you so much. Good morning, and please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Keith Carlson. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association. And I'd also like to thank Representative Skwodzinski and Representative Freiberg for introducing this legislation. I won't go through all the detail that Mr. Carlson, but I'll just add one point, and it's an important point. In order to avail ourselves of the exemption right now, we basically have to assume the liability for the suitability of the construction materials right now, because we're executing one contract for the purchase of the materials and then a separate truck contract for its erection. So should that construction turn out to be defective, we're caught in a quandary of who is responsible. Is it the contractor or is it the manufacturer of the materials? We avoid that with this legislation. Basically, if the construction proves to be defective, we would bring suit against the general, and he or she would have to pursue any remedies against the manufacturer if he or she believes the materials are defective. So this is an important simplification from our point of view, that we won't be caught in that trap. And also the veteran members of the committee are going to realize they're going to relieve themselves of the constant treadmill of bills that comes to you seeking to bypass the current laws or requirements by getting exemptions for specific projects. With that, I'll conclude. Be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Carlson? Thank you very much. And it was not mentioned, but the revenue estimate for House File 670 would be $28.9 million in 2020 and $29.7 million in 2021. So that's about close to about $59 million for the biennium. As Chair Davids was mentioning, there's always a cost to things. And Chair Davids, you mentioned 1991. And you and I first met at a mayor's conference in Fergus Falls, if you remember, in either 1990 or 1991. I know you were going to be running for a special election. I remember you talking about that. But do you remember what year that was, Chair Davids? 90 or 91 would have been that we would have met for the first time.
Mr. Chair, in 1990, the special election was in February of 91.
Okay.
What I do remember, and I shouldn't say this, but I don't recall meeting you, but I did have lunch with the mayor from Brooklyn Park or Brooklyn Center, Jesse Ventura. I do remember that one.
No, Chair Davids, that's fine. No, I can imagine that after meeting that mayor that everything else would have been forgotten. But as you mentioned 1991, I'm going to ask Ms. Dalton, because I think it was 1991 that the sales tax was increased from 6.0 to 6.5, and something was linked to local government aid as a mayor, I remember. So see if I'm somewhat right on that. Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Marquardt is correct. In 1991, also as part of kind of an ongoing budget issue, there was enacted a half-cent sales tax, but actually we made the counties enact it. So it was a county local option sales tax. However, if a county didn't enact it, not only did the county no longer get aid, but any local government located in the county also lost their aid. So this is what I would call the non-optional local option sales tax for counties. Of course, all 87 counties imposed it. The money went to a local government trust fund, along with 1.5 cents of the 6 cents state sales tax. So there was a 2% dedication that was supposed to go to pay for local government aids. That hung around for about 2 years, but people kept playing with what programs had to be paid in and out of that fund. And then 1 year, there was extra money at the end of the calendar year, so all the cities and counties got windfall amounts that they weren't expecting. And at that point, the next year, the legislature in 94 eliminated the local government trust fund, eliminated the county local option sales tax, and just increased the state tax by 0.5 cent. And all the money went back into the general fund.
Thank you, Ms. Dalton. And then you wonder why local officials get frustrated with state government from time to time. So thank you for that. Anyone else from the audience who would care to speak for or against House File 670 or House File 779? Seeing none, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think revenue is here. Could we hear from them in regard to Representative Fabian's question about streamlining this process of refunding or filing the claim?
Sure. If Department of Revenue, I know, is here, if someone would care to talk about the streamlining process or how this works, or if there could be. And if you can't right now, the department can get back to members here. Well, good morning, and thank you so much.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joanna Bears. I'm the Minnesota Department of Revenue's Legislative Director. And Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, could you repeat your question?
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question basically is we've heard that there are a number of these different types of exemptions and so forth. and we know that they're complicated and so forth. What comfort can you give me and the committee and the taxpayer of the state of Minnesota that we actually are streamlining and it's requiring less resources in your agency to do this? Because let's face it, time is money, paperwork is money, and so forth. So how complicated is this, and is there something maybe in statute that you're required to do that we could eliminate and streamline this process to save money for the project, the proposers, the cities, and the state of Minnesota?
Ms. Bears?
Mr. Chair, Representative Fagan, we issue refunds all the time. That's part of our job. It would probably take some more resources in order to do this, but in regards to the statute, we'd have to go back and take a look at it for doing something to streamline it a little bit more. We'd have to go back and I'd have to consult with our attorneys to see if there's something that we could do.
Well, Representative Fabian, I think Ms. Dalton might have something to add to.
Imagine that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, the only reason I know a little bit more about this process is I actually worked with the city of Plymouth when they had to go through this process relatively recently. And the way it is done is that contractors, subcontractors, builders who are working with the city are required to, when they submit their invoices to the city, basically put on their invoice how much that they paid for sales tax on their construction materials. Basically, what the city then does is it essentially submits a spreadsheet. This is how much sales tax was paid by these contractors. They don't, the city itself doesn't get audited if the Department of Revenue thinks that some of the numbers look funny. They actually go back to the contractors or subcontractors to do the audit. And the reason this has been done is because building materials are fungible. And so if you just gave a blanket exemption to the contractors, it gets much harder to check to see how much of different materials were used in individual city or county projects. So it gets much harder to audit the contractors. This gives them a very specific thing to audit the contractors on.
Representative Page.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand that because I had a bill similar back a number of years ago with that. I'm just wondering about, you know, within the agency, streamlining and just making things easier for them to do and require less employee hours to do that. And it was just a question. I'm not.
Yeah, and I think we heard from Ms. Ferris that, you know, it's something they can take back and look at. So, Ms. Ferris, anything else to add to that than what you've already stated?
Mr. Chair, Representative, there's nothing else I'd like to add, but we can follow up with you once I take that information back and we'll get the information for you.
Thank you.
I know, Representative Freiberg, you had a comment on this.
I was just going to mention it's been brought, thank you, Mr. Chair, it's been brought to my attention. Just if you look at the revenue note in the upper right-hand corner, there's no additional administrative cost to this bill, if this bill were to be enacted. Okay. Just thought I'd mention that.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Fabian's point, maybe they could tell us about how many FTEs it takes to do this process, and then we can kind of get a sense as to how much manpower does it take to actually process this. And, you know, if they're doing audits of construction companies and subcontractors, that takes a lot of time. That's a lot of audit time. Bit on that. It's a lot of time.
Thank you. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I would take... Okay, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, but so to Representative Freiberg's comment about in the upper right-hand corner, there's no administrative cost. I fail to see how that can be possible if people are actually going to be doing this within the agency. There is a cost to the agency to process this.
Yeah,
I understand that the salaries are being paid through different means and so forth, but assume then that any thing that's brought to the agency is there would be no administrative cost to it.
Thank you, Representative Fabian. I think the committee, you know, would like to just know how this kind of process works and what type of staff time does it take and so forth. So at another meeting, if you know, we'll talk about that, if you'd be willing to come back and just talk about how this works and maybe how many hours it takes to process one of these, I think would be helpful for the committee. So if that would be good with the members, we'll do that in the future. So very good. Thank you much. Anything else? Any other questions from members? If not, Representative Leslie Gard, moves to lay over House File 670 for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. All right. And now, thank you, Representative Freiberg. At this time, anyone care to move House File 779 for possible inclusion? Representative Swazinski, would you like to move your bill?
Sure, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 779 for possible inclusion in a future tax bill.
Very good. Any further discussion or questions on that House File 779? If not, Representative Swazinski lays over House File 779 for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. Thank you very much. Representative Swazinski, would you like to move House File 702?
I would, Mr. Chair. I would like to move House File 702 for possible inclusion in a future tax bill shortly.
Very good. Please explain your bill.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this bill just simply expands the existing motor sales tax exemption for town purchases or city purchases of road maintenance vehicles. So if you had any difficulty coming into the Capitol today, our job as legislators should maybe encourage the purchase of snow plows, dump trucks, any vehicle that would maintain our roads and our ways to commute to the Capitol or any place of work across our state. And essentially the arguments are the same as we made for the previous bill, that any time we can decrease the cost for local governments, especially in the areas of road construction, and road maintenance, that we would do that, and that's what this bill moves forward. I have folks from the League of Minnesota Cities that can potentially come and talk about this bill, you know, that's that. So,
very good. So we'll open up the testifiers if you'd come forward, and please state your name again for the record.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. I want to thank Representative Swazinski for introducing this bill that was brought to our attention by a city in his district a couple of years ago, the city of Marshall, when they went to purchase a snowplow for the city. They found that they were paying the motor vehicle sales tax of 6.5%, and yet their neighboring townships were not paying the sales tax on a very similar purchase. The township exemption was wisely enacted back in 1997. I think the state legislature realized that we're asking local governments to maintain these important roads, and why would we want to tax those vehicles? And so what we're asking for today is that basically that town exemption be extended to the purchases by cities and counties. This bill is also supported. I was asked to mention that the Metro Cities Organization and the Minnesota Association of Counties supports this bill as well. Let me just mention one more thing. Again, with the 2013 re-extension of the exemption, the general sales tax exemption to cities and counties, that did not cover this particular tax because this tax is not in 297A. This tax is in 297B. And let me also be clear that we're not asking for all vehicles from cities and counties to be exempted. We're asking for those vehicles that are used to maintain the local roads. I've given you a handout that has one example. I talked to the city of Northfield. Former administrator from Marshall is now in Northfield, and he was one that pushed the bill back a couple of years ago. They say a typical snowplow that they purchased would be about $180,000, $190,000 or thereabouts, and the estimate of the sales or the motor vehicle sales tax paid on that vehicle would be a little over $11,000 in order to maintain our local roads. So with that, Mr. Chair, I think I've covered all of my points, but we really appreciate the committee's consideration of this bill and would encourage you to include it in the omnibus tax bill.
Any questions for Mr. Carlson? Thank you very much. You didn't. You'll have a chance to ask Mr. Carlson questions next year, too. Please state your name.
Mr. Chairman, members, Keith Carlson, Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association. As Mr. Gary Carlson indicated, counties also support this legislation. Just like the state, counties are struggling to come up with the money to maintain, much less expand their transportation system. So we are extremely conscious of the external costs that we have to accrue in maintaining and developing our systems. This is one of them. We're also focusing on permitting efficiencies in this legislative session to try and drive down those costs so we have as much resources as available to maintain and hopefully expand our system. So again, thank Representative Swedinsky for introducing this legislation. We certainly would appreciate its enactment.
Any questions for Mr. Carlson Kay? Thank you very much. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just ask Representative Swedinsky this question. So in Subdivision 11, the definition of town is changed to local government. So how extensive does that become? Or maybe we need someone else to answer that. But I'm curious, because does that mean joint powers boards and all who might have the ability to purchase would be included?
Wazinski?
Mr. Chair, members, I believe if you look in let me double check my notes here. But, you know, essentially what that does is put elected officials, so folks that would be elected by the public, so local boards are not. You know, those would not be, but it would be. So it's essentially what this bill does is put parity along all elected governments, so townships, cities, counties would all be under that umbrella.
So, Mr. Chair, that means they have to be
elected. Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That means they have to be elected. Is that correct?
I believe so.
Representative Swedinsky, Mr. Carlson?
Not appointed.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, the bill does extend the exemption to, just let me go back for 1 second, it does extend the exemption to special districts and to joint powers entities. Joint powers entities would be formed by a combination of local units of government. The special taxing district definition, I might have to defer to Ms. Dalton on that. I don't know that there's many special districts under that chapter 6.465 that would actually be purchasing a snowplow or road maintenance vehicle. Many of those special districts are things like computer consortiums and hospital districts that I can't imagine would be making a purchase of a snowplow or a road construction vehicle. There may be a few in there that, according to the state auditor's report, there are some public safety authorities, but I think most of those are like ambulance districts. And the fire, there's a fire protection district up in the Cloquet area that might qualify. But again, I don't believe they would be making that purchase. But maybe Ms. Dalton would have further information.
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't know of any specific district. But really what that language is aimed at is if a city and a county or a couple of cities are going together and jointly purchasing their equipment, we wanted them to get the same exemption as they would get if they were making their purchases separately.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Ms. Dalton, would that include sewer districts?
Ms. Dalton.
Chair, Representative Erickson, if a sewer district is buying road maintenance equipment to maintain roads, I guess it would, provided that the joint powers agreement or the special district, the board operating it was made up essentially of elected officials from the cities or counties or towns.
Thank you.
Representative Erickson, anything further?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. All right, any other questions from members? If not, from the audience, anyone who would care to testify for or against House File 702? Seeing none, Representative Swedinsky, any last comments?
Thank you for the chairman's time and for the members as well. I appreciate your support. Thank you.
And Representative Swedinsky lays over House File 702 for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. At this time, I'm going to turn over the gavel to Vice Chair Leslie Gard.
You got here just in time.
Welcome here, Mark Cord. Would you like to move your bill?
I would like to move House File 382 for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill.
Okay. Please proceed.
Thank you very much. So, members, this bill is not a new bill. This has been around for a number of years, carried by a number of legislators. And what it does is eliminates the sunset for the Minnesota State High School League on sales tax exemptions for their activities and events. And, of course, the Minnesota State High School League runs all sorts of activities, from football to hockey to speech and debate, the trap shooting, the whole works. And that's what our – and Representative Fabian?
Wrestling.
And absolutely wrestling, though. How did I forgot that? So just a little bit of history before we go further on this. So years ago, way back, I don't know exactly the year, but if a high school is having a regular season event, there is not sales tax charged on the football game or the basketball game at the high school and so forth. But prior to 2006, once it became a Minnesota State High School League tournament, which was a section tournament or the state tournament, then sales tax was collected on admission to those events. So in 2006 was the first time that that exemption passed into law, was 2006. And as part of that tax exemption, they thought, okay, where are these saved dollars going to go? And it was Representative Rukavina, who in tax committee said that this should go back to the kids somehow. So there, at that time, there's a Minnesota State High School League Foundation established, which the dollars that are saved, which, by the way, estimated in 2027 when the sunset would end, would be about $1.2 million a year. So that's about the revenue that's brought in, about $1.2 million a year. Those dollars will go back out in grants to schools. And a lot of those grants are used to reduce the cost of student fees for sports. And also a lot of those dollars go to after-school bus activity for students. And if anyone wants to see at some point where the dollars have gone to schools and so forth, I have this, and we can make this more generally public, but I have this here too. So it does go back out. The high school league does not take those dollars saved and use them for administration. I think those go out in grants to schools. So why would we look at eliminating the sunset? And by the way, in the 2017 tax bill, this was reinstated for a 10-year sunset to 2027. And so why are we here in 2019 looking at this? So, well, just the history. In 2006, it was passed for 5 years. And then 2011, it was basically passed for another 5 years. But in 2015 and 2016, there was no tax bill. And so for actually 2 years, this exemption did not exist. So sales tax had to be collected for 2 years. And then in 2017, under Chair Davids, this was reinstated. And it's my understanding is that it's kind of the Senate that's always wanted to put the sunset in. And so the fact that this is going back out to kids, it's a program that has been proven to benefit schools and students and student-athletes and those participating in all extracurricular activities. It's been a benefit for all those. I don't know why we need to sunset this. I think it's got a proven record that it works, and it's the dollars that are being saved, that the state, basically that one, which will ultimately be about, it's about $800,000 right now, but with inflation, another 9-8 years, it's going to be about $1.2 million. Those dollars are going back to students. And you know in your own communities where a lot of schools are charging $50, $100 per sport, you know, this allows those kids in these schools that might not be able to afford it to afford it. And I know schools do waive fees and that type of thing, but this does go back to helping those students who are in these activities. So, member, I'm open for question, but this bill basically would eliminate the sunset and make this sales tax exemption permanent.
Any questions from the members? Representative Brandt.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. Representative Marquardt, how about in the Senate?
What's the appetite on this? Are they inclined to also pass something like this, or have you heard anything about
Mr. that? Chairman?
Mr. Chair, Representative Brown, I do not know.
Okay.
For sure. I presume a bill in the Senate making its way through, but I would never want to venture on ultimately the future of a bill in the Senate.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Davis.
It's against House rules to mention that other body, first of all. Second of all, we should have this being a, you know, full and open committee. I would like to know if anyone would wish to testify against the chairman's bill.
Would anybody in the audience like to testify in favor or against the chairman's bill?
Not this guy.
Seeing none. Any closing comments, Chair Marquardt?
No, thank you very much, members. And, you know, tournament season is just around the corner now. It's February, and the snow's flying, so tournaments have to be close by. So,
okay.
So, Mr. Chair, I'd like to lay over House File 382 for possible inclusion into the taxometer's bill.
Okay. Chair Marquardt renews his motion to lay over House File 382 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Anything else for the good of the order? Chair Marquardt.
Mr. Chair, tomorrow we're going to hear two Representative McDonald's bills who he wanted to move from today till tomorrow. So we'll hear those first. And then we've got a bill on increasing standard deductions and then two bills on cutting the income tax marginal rate. So it's kind of individual tax cut day tomorrow. So.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Anything else for the good of the order? Hearing none, we are adjourned.